you are a Muslim, today will always be the day that one of the two parties in our country nominated somebody for president who thinks you and your family should be banned from entering this country on the basis of your religion. Mr. Trump told NBC's Lester Holt tonight that he will somehow institute his national Muslim ban within the first 100 days of his presidency.
I took a fair degree of a little bit of heat from folks when I said the very moment that Donald Trump gets the GOP nomination is the very day that the GOP dies. And there were more than a few commentators that disagreed with that. Also, of course, they didn't hear me say it, but Rachel Maddow there on one of her shows talked about all of the crazy folks that have run for president in the past and how after those folks ran, it didn't kill the Republican Party. But never ever has anybody gotten the nomination of the party, and that's what it seems like has happened now. And for all the time that I spent saying, look, you make that man your nominee, it's gonna kill your party. And it seems that is exactly what happened. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 159. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Melvin. I'm fairly certain you know all that. I want to talk about what this means. I want to talk about how we got here. And then in the next segment that comes up at the end, fair warning, I am going to say a swear. Well, it's not considered a swear by everybody. Quite a few people use it, and they use it a lot. And it's a word that has come to be known among some folks as a term of endearment. It's a term that I think needs to go away. And I'm not just going to allude to it, I'm going to say the actual word on this program. I will warn you before I say it, that way you can leave your radio, walk away from it, or turn off the podcast and immediately delete it and get that demon out of your digital music player. But I'll warn you before that comes up. I listen to a fair amount of talk radio. This may or may not surprise you. I listen to more conservative talk radio than I do liberal talk radio because I like the idea of a discussion. I like the idea of seeking new ideas. I don't want to live in an echo chamber, and you shouldn't want to either. I've seen more than a few Bernie Sanders groups online, and really all they're doing is wanking one another. And what I say, wanking, I mean they're just stroking each other off. Okay, let me try this again. They will share these articles. Bernie's going to win, and here's why. The DNC is cheating, and here's why. Hillary's going to be arrested, and here's why. And it's all clickbait. It's all crap. You're just wanking on, and you're trying to make each other feel better. And these groups, I understand, you're feeling kind of in the dumps, because it seems like Senator Sanders might not get it. The math is not working out so much in his favor. So you make things up, and then you start sharing it online to make yourselves feel better. I don't like that. I want to know the truth. However painful and unpleasant it is, I want to know the truth. And not the truth, and I'm making air quotes, I want the actual truth. Steve Schmidt, who worked on the McCain campaign in 2008, was on CNN recently. And there were a lot of Republicans bemoaning the fact that, well, Donald Trump is looking like he's going to be their nominee now. There's no one else in the race, it's just him. And Steve Schmidt pointed something out about talk radio that I've been talking about for years.
A lot of commentators say they scratch their chins and say, my God, the tone of this election. Have they not listened to talk radio for 5 minutes in this country that reaches 50 million people a day for a moment in the last 10 years? The tone is disgusting around our political discourse. And Trump has been a reflection of that tone in this steel cage match Republican primary. You look at the intellectual collapse of the conservative movement, the fading of giants like William F. Buckley, you know, the replacements, you know, of, you know, purveyors of blogs and polemics that...
It did look like for a while that Cruz had a pretty solid chance of getting the nomination.
I'm a maniac, and everyone on this stage is stupid, fat, and ugly.
But then, when not even the people that he worked with in the Congress were going to get behind him, well, it seemed like he's not going to be able to sustain the kind of support that he's going to need in order to be the nominee.
First of all, in case anybody gets confused, I am not endorsing Ted Cruz. I hate Ted Cruz. And I think I'll take cyanide if he ever got the nomination. Now, having said that,
wow.
Even when he showed up to Indiana to campaign, people turned out and got in his face about how much they did not like him.
So Donald Trump has accused everyone in this race of being a liar. Donald cannot tell the truth in 1 minute.
You'll find out tomorrow. So, Indiana don't want you.
Well, sir, you are entitled to have your rights, but I'll tell you this. Sir, America is a better country.
Without you.
Thank you for those kind sentiments. Let me point out, I have treated you respectfully the entire time. And a question that everyone here should ask.
Are you Canadian?
And it seemed at times that he was getting absolutely flustered because he didn't know how he was losing to Donald Trump. Now, one point I want to make is he screwed himself with respect to New York, using the phrase New York values, which is an anti-Semitic phrase. But even if you're not using it in that way, if you're saying New York values and you're using it as a pejorative, if you're saying it in a negative way, well, then that just leaves it open to interpretation. And when he lost New York, well, that was a big state that he really could have used. So sometimes Ted would get on the mic and sometimes he would say things that really made absolutely no sense.
Well, let me be clear. Donald Trump may be a rat, but I have no desire to copulate with
him. Okay. As opposed to the other rats, which you do have a desire to copulate. Boehner even came out of retirement to some degree, giving a public speech in front of some friendly GOP folks, because even he felt like he had to say the way he felt about Cruz.
Former House Speaker John Boehner raising some serious eyebrows today with comments about Senator Ted Cruz calling him Lucifer in the flesh. Your take on this latest dispute, you know both of these men.
I fully agree with John Boehner, and maybe he gives Lucifer a bad name by comparing him to Ted Cruz.
The man that I feel worse for in all of this has to be Reince Priebus. Now, Reince Priebus decided that he wanted to be the head of the GOP. He wanted to be the head of the RNC. And so he kind of brought this on himself to some degree, but I really don't think he thought that the way this year was going to go was the way this year was going to go. At the recent White House Correspondents' Dinner, President Obama picked Reince Priebus out of the crowd.
See that you feel that you've earned a night off. Congratulations on all your success. The Republican Party, the nomination process, it's all going great. Keep it up.
Even when he appeared on CNN, the host couldn't help but just see the pain in his eyes.
Are you pouring Baileys on your breakfast cereal yet?
No, I didn't have to. I had plenty of coffee already this morning. No need. No Baileys yet.
Pretty tasty. Reince Priebus,
yeah.
Thanks so much. Great to talk to you.
All right.
Let's get to John.
All right, it does sound like he has the Baileys handy, though, in case he feels like he needs it at any moment.
I suppose it doesn't matter, though. He's now the head of the party. Hey, GOP, it is now time to bring the party together. It is now time to coalesce around the person that your constituency has chosen. So now the leaders of the party, hey, looking at you, Paul Ryan, it's time for you to come out and support him. Hey, you're the de facto head of the party right now, Speaker of the House, third step away from the presidency. What say you, Mr. Ryan?
Presumptive nominee, Donald Trump. Will you support him?
Well, to be perfectly candid with you, Jake, I'm just not ready to do that at this point. I'm not there right now. And I hope to, though, and I want to. But I think what is required is that we unify this party. And I think the bulk of the burden on unifying the party will have to come from our presumptive nominee.
Uh-oh.
My party is going batshit crazy.
So on the one hand, yes, this has been coming for years. The fact of what you're hearing on conservative talk radio is really what people believe. If you continually tell people that America is in decline, that America is facing all these terrible existential threats, that people are coming to kill us in the night, that Zero Dark 30 is going to play out in your house every night of every week, When you tell them that there's all these killers coming for us and we face... Hey. When some guy comes along and starts flexing his muscle and being very brash and saying that he's willing to kill and torture people to protect America, you don't get to be surprised when he becomes the nominee of a party of very frightened people. Not to mention all of the free media that Donald Trump has gotten. According to Media Matters, he's gotten more free media than anybody. He's gotten almost $2 billion in free media.
Whether it's Fox or MSNBC or CNN, you often can't tell the difference. You're flipping from one channel to another, and they're all Trump all the time. It's Trumpland.
And let's point something out. He's not that great. He doesn't plan on making America great. He's running on slogans. He's calling people childish names. And then when he decides to get up and give a speech and not call people childish names, well, all of a sudden, he's the king. All of a sudden, he's a statesman. No. It's crazy because he's not. But we've become so accustomed to the absurd that when he stops being absurd, he begins to look like a statesman. It's really just a lowering of the bar.
Well, he's been able to get us to adapt to absurdity, okay?
That's right.
The mere fact, and that's the only achievement he has been able to...
That's a big achievement.
But the fact that he doesn't drop trowel at one, you know, press conference means he should be on Mount Rushmore.
Right.
It's completely insane that we're even having a conversation about it.
So the very night that he appeared to clinch the nomination, because Ted Cruz dropped out, then John Kasich dropped out the next day. Now, initially, 22 Republicans making their intentions known or were hinting that they were thinking about running for president. And then 17 of them declared, and one by one, they dropped out until we're down to one. I think it's interesting, they started with 17. They used to have debates and then a kids' table debate because they had so freaking many people running for president. And this guy still rose to the top. So they have 17. The Democrats have 5. The Democrats still have 2 people in the race, and the Republicans have just the 1. So we're down to 1 on May 3rd. Just 1. And it's Mr. Trump. And the Republicans, who agree with Melvin, hit the Twitter sphere. And it went like this. Quote, "You may be right. I may be crazy. But it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. It turns out to have worked well as a campaign slogan." That's Kristen Anderson. "Congratulate the Trump supporters. Tonight will be their high point. In 6 months, they'll be blaming the rest of us for their choices." That's Ben Shapiro. "Now commences 6 months of Trump supporters abjectly begging conservatives to take the blame for their bad decisions." That's Dan McLaughlin. "I don't want to congratulate Hillary on winning the presidency tonight, but she just did." That's Eric Erickson from Red State. "Madam President." That's the whole tweet from Charles Cook. # I'm with her. Ben Howe. "The party decides to jump off a bridge." John Tabin. "I am now drinking wine directly from the bottle." Directly. "It's over. 100%. Donald Trump will be the nominee." That's Steve Schmidt. "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we deserve it." That's Lindsey Graham. "America." This is a dark one. "America. July 4th, 1776 to May 3rd, 2016. That's Philip Klein. "The Washington Examiner's Philip Klein then tweets, "I've officially deregistered as a Republican." Quote, "I'm a registered Republican. When I was 18, I thought free markets and liberty were important. Not sure what Republican means today." Kristen Anderson. "SE Cup. Anybody know where the nearest meeting for anti-Trump grievers is?" Ben Shapiro. "You're a conspiratorial piece of progressive refuse with fewer brain cells than your average supporter." Whoa! Ben Shapiro. "Fox just called Indiana. Conservatives just called America." Matt Walsh. "Goodbye, Republican Party." Ben Howe. "He can drop out if he wants, Donald. The rest of us will be working to defeat you all the way to November." Based on this, it would seem that there's really nobody happy with the fact that he's clinched the nomination. There is one group that is quite happy, though.
"You're paying attention to the presidential elections this time."
"Oh, yes."
"In your own personal opinion, who's best for the job?"
"I think Donald Trump would be best for the job."
"For president?"
"Yes. The reason a lot of Klan members like Donald Trump, it's because a lot of what he believes, we believe in. We want our country to be safe."
Even if that means, as Trump has suggested, temporarily barring Muslims from entering the United States. And one more thing, says the Imperial Wizard.
If Donald Trump dropped out tomorrow, I'd support Kasich before I would Ted Cruz.
Why is that?
Because he's not an American citizen.
That's the head of the Virginia KKK. And yeah, that guy is not alone. The folks that are happiest about the Trump nomination are none other than the white nationalists, the white hoods, the KKK, who, by the way, say they are a political party and not a bunch of racists. There is an article over at the Southern Poverty Law Center website, and the headline says, right-wing extremists hail the ascension of, and this is no joke, Emperor Trump as the GOP nominee. It's a happy time out there in the land of extremists. Quote, white men in America and across the planet are partying like it's 1999 following Trump's decisive victory over the evil enemies of our race, exalted Andrew Anglin of the neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer. He's getting white people excited for the first time in memory, said a Stormfront participant. These are all white power websites. Look at the crowds when he gets... When the cameras pan out, they're huge, or should I say huge, and almost 100% white. It's fantastic to see. I absolutely do believe that this is an important day, a pivotal day, proclaimed David Duke. It really has been a referendum on nationalism. It has been a referendum on populism. It has been a referendum on political correctness. It has been a referendum against the controlled establishment, both the media and the political establishment in America. And so far, Trump has whipped them. Why not take a chance on him? Asked one Stormfront participant. The choice of Clinton versus the cuckservative isn't particularly good. Trump, by contrast, has proposed many things that are more implicitly pro-white than anything offered by an American politician in my lifetime. Did you catch that word I used? Cuckservative. If you spend any amount of time on white power websites, and this talk show host has, you will see that word cuckservative come up, or cuck. C-U-C-K. I know, it sounds like I'm using the swears, but I promise you I'm not. I keep it nice and clean on this show. So, C-U-C-K, cuck. Now, this was a tough word. I had never heard this word before. I don't frequent white power websites. I'm beginning to now because that's where all of the excitement and happiness is right now because Donald Trump is the nominee. This is their guy. They see this guy as their Hitler. No kidding. I remember President Obama became president, and everybody was marching, holding pictures of the president with a Hitler mustache and all these other Hitler-esque things, and say the American taxpayer or the Jews for Obama's ovens and stupid things like that. And now there's a guy who just got the GOP nomination, and all the white power people really think that he's the next Hitler, and it's okay. There's no talk about that. So the word cuck now. From the best I could deduce, just looking around, this is a slur. They say cuck, they say cuckservative. I can't even say it, it's such a BS word. When they say that, they mean a person that has some left leanings because they want people that are to the right and only to the right. So yeah, this blows up the argument of that fella that they always have on CNN who's saying that the KKK is really a leftist group. When somebody, a conservative politician, is not far enough to the right, they call him a cuckservative or a fake conservative. It's a slur, but it's a slur that's only used in white power websites. Former Klan leader David Duke, quote, "The Trump campaign at a whole series of levels is a great opportunity for us to expose the people who really run the Republican Party, who run the Democratic Party, who run the political establishment, and who are leading us all to disaster." Even though Trump is not explicitly talking about European Americans, and this is what he calls white people, because he's trying to be more diplomatic. He calls them European Americans. He is implicitly talking about the interests of European Americans. Duke went on to explain how the Trump victory was guaranteed to help spread their ideology and discredit the Jewish neoconservatives he has long claimed control the Republican Party. Complaining about Jews, you really would have thought Cruz was their guy. Not white power enough, I suppose. "I think that these Jewish extremists have made a terribly crazy miscalculation because all they're really going to be doing by doing a Never Trump movement is exposing their alien anti-American majority position to all the Republicans, and they're going to push people more into awareness
that the neocons are the problem, that these Jewish supremacists who control our country are the problem and the reason why America is not great. Jewish chutzpah knows no bounds, he observed with no hint of irony. And it goes on. James Kirkpatrick of the white nationalist website VDare chimed in with an encomium for the candidate. Trump is taking the nationalist impulses the Republican Party has used for years and putting them at the forefront of this political movement. He's downplaying some of the hardcore social issues which conservatives have already lost on anyway. He's abandoning rhetoric about slashing programs which actually benefit the Republican Party's core constituency. And he's tapping into a narrative of national redemption which is deeply felt all over the country. And then there's this take on it. This comes from two white nationalists, Matthew Heimbach of the pro-Trump Traditionalist Worker Party and his radio co-host, Sven Longshanks, on their daily radio show said, "Hail Emperor Trump and hail victory." Then they added, "Sig Heil. Whether Trump's a full White House nationalist or not is irrelevant at the moment, since getting one into the White House is impossible at the moment. What I see, though, is a strong white leader who's completely unafraid of speaking his mind and shattering political correctness." And that's what they call it, political correctness. Also, think about this. If Trump is assassinated before the election, it will cause an awakening in whites that we haven't seen in years. Whether you support the guy or not, you cannot deny he's having a massive impact on white America. What we need to do is somehow use his massive support to boost the white nationalist movement. So Timothy McVeigh, who blew up the federal building, did so after reading the Turner Diaries. Now, in the Turner Diaries, and I've only read the Cliff Notes on it, in the Turner Diaries, a domestic terrorist attack is carried out, and it's a fictional book. And after that attack is carried out, the government overreacts and starts stripping people's rights and privacy, and then all of the white people raise up and take over the government. Okay, that's pretty much the premise. So whenever they talk about stuff like this, they really think that the Turner Diaries are going to be fulfilled. This is one of their handbooks. And they believe that either by carrying out a domestic terrorist attack, which they've carried out tons of already, or the assassination of Trump. See, on these message boards, there, and this is, I don't think Trump realizes he's playing with fire here. On these white message boards, these white power message boards, there are folks talking about how awful it would be if he were assassinated because they almost have a white nationalist in the White House. But then there are folks who say how great it would be for the movement because it would get other white people to join up with the rest of the white nationalists. It would make white people raise up, a la fulfilling the Turner Diaries. And Trump can pretend that he's not a white nationalist or that he's not speaking to white nationalists or that he doesn't mean to speak to white nationalists. But he's been using dog whistle language for some time.
America first will be the major and overriding theme of my administration. But to chart our path forward, we must first briefly take a look back. We have a lot to be proud of. In the 1940s, we saved the world. The greatest generation beat back the Nazis and Japanese imperialists.
The America First group started, I believe, in the late 30s or in 1940, and it was essentially a college group that was against going to war. But then it was essentially co-opted by white nationalists, the most famous one among them, Charles Lindbergh. In September 11th, if I'm not mistaken, of 1941, he gave a speech that's referred to, Charles Lindbergh, yes, that Charles Lindbergh, gave a speech that was referred to as the Des Moines speech. And in that speech, he said, America first, talked up the America First Party, why we need to put America first. And his problem was he did not want America to join the world war that was going on. He did not want America to go to war against Germany. He did not want them to take on Hitler because he himself was a white nationalist. Lindbergh was. And he believed in Hitler. And he loved what Hitler was doing. So much so, he even talked about moving to Germany and living under Hitler. Now, Trump can say that he's completely ignorant on history and just doesn't know, but hey, you don't get to be president if you don't understand the history of this country. But he gets up there, he says America first, the white nationalists hear it, and then they move out for him. I've talked about before how Ronald Reagan launched his campaign for president after he got the nomination in a place called Philadelphia, Mississippi. And what that was Ronald Reagan, that was a dog whistle for the white nationalists. That was a dog whistle for the separatists, for the segregationists. Because that town, which by the way is not a large town, but the one thing that that town is known for is that's the town where three civil rights workers were killed. And as soon as he became the GOP nominee, he went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, of all places, and gave a speech about states' rights. And once again, dog whistle language. When they hear states' rights, they hear black people getting hurt more than white people. Donald Trump did the same thing this cycle, and it's not a mistake. After President Obama was reelected in Suffolk County, New York, there was a man that was brutally murdered named Marcelo Lucero. And Trump, a couple of weeks ago, when he was campaigning in New York, didn't just go to Suffolk County. He went to that specific street, damn near right on the exact same spot where Marcelo Lucero was murdered.
The message from Hispanic advocates is clear. Donald Trump should not appear at a Patchogue venue on the same street where immigrant Marcelo Lucero was killed in a headline-making 2008 hate crime. 21-year Patchogue resident Maria Avasilas says she remembers when immigrants were beaten routinely here, and she worries that Trump's visit will start the violence again.
I'm really afraid because I don't want this bad things happen.
Donald Trump is the front runner, so we welcome him to Suffolk County.
The chairman of Suffolk's Republican Party says he has no plan to move or postpone the Trump appearance.
And he was introduced by an unrepentant white nationalist named Carl Paladino that actually ran for office in New York.
Any chance does anybody in this room know if we're going to build a wall? Are we going to build a wall? And who's going to pay for that wall? Is that right? God bless America and God bless Donald Trump for facing these people.
These people, they have a very special way of making other races seem like the other, talking about them in terms that make them the other. From this Southern Poverty Law Center article, quote, his VP must be a potentially great white, pro-America, America first, there it is, president, wrote a Stormfront poster, in case the Jews, and that's who it would be regardless of who pulls the trigger, in case the Jews assassinate Donald. Quote, it has to be someone at least as tough as Trump on all the important issues and who is certified to be anti-establishment, certified Phoenix 1933. Otherwise, Trump would be a tempting assassination target. When you ask the Trump campaign or Trump supporters how they feel about the white nationalist support, he says, I disavow. And you ask his supporters, they say, look, he's disavowed. What's the matter with you? Why keep asking? Hey, how many times he's got to disavow? And I say, okay, I get it. Fine, he disavowed. But why is he not concerned about the white power support? Why is he not concerned about the white nationalist support? And then they'll go back to the same thing. Hey, he already disavowed. How many times has he got to freaking disavow? He's already freaking disavowed. Whoa! In most of the states, white nationalists have been doing robocalls for Donald Trump. And it started in Iowa. But as they went state by state, the white nationalists, and this is why they don't endorse, they support the candidate they like, but they don't endorse because they know how toxic their endorsement would be. And so as they were making these calls from state to state to state in support of Donald Trump, and the white nationalists made these calls in every state, essentially. I'm going to play you one from Wisconsin, a robocall from a white power group in Wisconsin. And you'll notice that in this particular message, they don't say white nationalist until the end.
The National Super PAC makes this call to support Donald Trump. My name is Mary Minchell, and I am a member of the American Freedom Party. I am voting for Donald Trump because he will not only be presidential, he will put America first. Furthermore, he will respect all women and will help preserve Western civilization. If you vote for Donald Trump, he will be a fine president. president. He will select the very best persons to be in his cabinet, and the entire world will benefit from his leadership. This message is paid for by William Johnson, a farmer and a white nationalist.
When Donald Trump went to California, he had to drive backwards on the freeway, which means he had to drive against the traffic and in the shoulder and drive around to the back of the venue where he was going to talk because of all of the people that were there protesting his appearance. I recently heard a reporter say, a veteran reporter, he has not seen these kind of protests since another very proud white nationalist ran for office. And that man was George Wallace.
This protest has gotten a little bit heated with protesters breaking through the barricade right behind me. We're in front of the Hyatt Hotel where Donald Trump is set to speak in just a couple of minutes. And you can see these protesters picking up the barricades and tossing them aside. It's been a relatively peaceful protest for the past few hours. But just now, with the arrival of the Republican front runner, things are getting heated. And you can see these protesters are making their way to the front of the Hyatt Hotel. And I have to tell you, I don't see police officers trying to control this crowd, but perhaps they are closer to the front door of the hotel. As you mentioned, Greg, many of these protesters managed to go around to the back of the hotel trying to get in that way. Earlier, we know that some demonstrators got inside because they unfurled a banner that said, "Stop hate."
And then as soon as Donald Trump got inside, he wasted no time making a racist joke.
That was not the easiest entrance I've ever made. My wife called. She said, "There are helicopters following you," and we did. And then we went under a fence and through a fence. And, oh, boy, I felt like I was crossing the border, actually. You know, it's true.
Quote, back at the Daily Stormer, the notorious hacker Weave, who has been recently associated with hack attacks in which campus faxes were flooded with white supremacist flyers, offered an ominous warning for any conservatives whom he and his fellow alt-right activists have dubbed cuckservatives or cucks who might dare to refuse to get in line with Trump. As Trump's once ridiculed dreams transform from fevered visions to shadows upon the ruined landscape of America, we use that darkness to attack our mutual enemies. Now is the time to lean hard on everyone, hashtag never Trump. There is no method of ruin too rude or personal to destroy these people. We bombard their employers with hate posting. We show up at the doors of their homes and call them cucks and traitors to their faces. We do whatever is necessary to run these people out of town and make sure they never try to slink back. We must leverage every second we have before the general election to purify the political establishment of rotten Marxists and those who would bow before them, because this is the way the cucks end. Evidently, this is also the way the first majority presidential nomination in modern history to be embraced by far right-wing extremists begins. This is them actually saying that they're going to, if you're a never Trump person, they will show up at your work. They will show up at your front door and they will get in your face. And there is no punishment that is too harsh for you. So with scaring off Latinos, with scaring off African Americans, with scaring off women, how do they plan to win an election?
African Americans, favorable for Trump, 7%. Unfavorable, 91%. What did Donald Trump ever do to African Americans? I'm not getting this. Far and away, the biggest repudiation of any political candidate.
I'm not sure if you have ever heard of Michael Savage. If you're a listener to this show, then you have, because I've played him on this show before. Previous to Donald Trump running for president, he decided to go on Savage's show more than a few times. And Savage was one of the early adopters of his message. And now that he's the nominee, Michael Savage would like some credit, please.
21 years, my message has been borders, language, and culture. My last 3 to 4 best-selling books, if you look at them, which you're going to scan today, you will see my solutions for saving America. And many of these bullet points or talking points have been and are being used by the Trump campaign to the credit of Donald Trump, and of course to the benefit of the United States of America. And I'm going to take credit not for getting out the vote. I certainly wouldn't take credit for that. I did not do that. But for being the architect of Trump's messaging. There is no way to refute that. Everyone who understands the realities of what Trump is saying and why he is popular understands it's related to what I have written going back several books now, what I've said on radio since 1994.
Michael Savage would like to get some credit, please, for elevating this white nationalist to not just the head of the GOP, but hopefully to the head of the country. And Republicans are bemoaning the fact that this guy got there. It's not enough to simply disavow these extremist groups. You have to adopt policies that are opposite of what these extremist groups want. Or if you just want to cuddle up with these groups, embrace their ideology, well, then you get what you pay for.
The Republicans have sown with their extremist tactics. They are now reaping with Donald Trump's candidacy. Now, every day, another Republican bemoans the rise of Donald Trump. They say a Trump nomination will set their party back decades. I agree. It will set the Republican Party back if Donald Trump is their standard bearer. But Donald Trump didn't come out of nowhere. It wasn't long after Senator McConnell said his number one goal was to prevent the president's reelection that Donald Trump started his racist campaign to discredit the president's citizenship. Remember the birther movement? And Ted Cruz embarked on his strategy of holding the government hostage to get his way. These things are connected. When you have leaders willing to bring the whole of government to a halt, to make headlines, you may just give rise to candidates who promise to do even more radical and dangerous things. Because once you make the extreme normal, you open the door to even worse.
Now, I know it seems like only in America, that this kind of thing could only happen in America. But this message that has been shared here, this anti-government message, this horribly racist message, and the tolerance of hate speech in America. Well, it's not just here. The Philippines are having a particularly interesting election as well. There's a man running for president named Rodrigo Duterte. And they refer to him as the Philippines' Donald Trump. This from Time Magazine. The two candidates with the least experience of national government are out front. Here in America, at least, the left-wing party that we have is trying to put somebody in the White House that has some government experience. Quote, the Philippines will elect its new president on Monday. So this is this coming Monday. This show will be in your hot little hands when this comes out. So you should check the headlines to see if this guy wins. Right now, the polls have Duterte winning. The Philippines will elect its new president on Monday. That's this coming Monday, following a rough and tumble campaign worthy of Southeast Asia's most vibrant democracy. Five candidates are vying to replace the outgoing president, who's ineligible for re-election after serving a six-year term. The two at the top are Grace Poe, a single-term senator and the adopted daughter of Philippine movie great Fernando Poe, and Rodrigo Duterte, the tough-talking mayor of Davao City on insurgency-plagued Mindanao Island.
Voters in the Philippines will select a new president on May 9th, and that race is starting to look a little bit like the Republican nominating contest here in the United States. First, the frontrunner is talking tough on illegal behavior. As the mayor of one of the safest cities in the Philippines, Davao, candidate Rodrigo Duterte has long said his secret is simple. Extrajudicial killings. You commit robbery and rape your victim, I will kill you, he told a crowd last year. The second point of comparison between Duterte and Mr. Donald Trump, they're both holding onto solid leads in the polls despite repeatedly enraging their opponents. Duterte joked earlier this month about the rape and murder of an Australian missionary, Jacqueline Hamill, in 1989. Duterte was also mayor of Davao then, when a prison break turned into a hostage situation and Hamill, who was performing missionary work in city jails, was among those captured. In remarks filmed during a campaign stop, Duterte said it was a pity Hamill died, but the rest of his comments were hard to defend. Quote, they all raped her, they all lined up, he said. I was angry because she was raped, that's one thing, but she was so beautiful, the mayor should have been first. What a waste. Duterte has rejected calls to apologize for those comments.
Duterte joked about raping a woman. When he says the mayor should have been first, he was talking about himself. He's saying that he should have been first to rape her. Now, there are five people running for president in the Philippines, and the one who is just behind him in the polls is a woman, and he joked about how he should have been there, should have been the first to rape this woman. And he's winning. Right now, he holds a lead with 32.4%, and that doesn't seem like a lot. And it wouldn't be in America because it doesn't meet the 50% threshold, but Poe is behind him with 24.6%. But this time on Monday, and I'm doing this at dinner time on the weekend, he could be their new president. And his supporters are absolutely fanatical about him. Human rights groups allege that Duterte's crime-busting efforts in the town where he was the mayor involved death squads stalking suspected criminals and summarily executing them in the street. Amnesty International has called for the investigation of 700 suspicious deaths, and Duterte has refused to apologize for his tactics during his 30 years as a mayor and prosecutor, though he told Time that his forces only opened fire when encountering violent resistance.
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure. I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
And let's not forget about this golden oldie.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters.
One of the things that gets talked about a lot on the campaign trail is political correctness. He says that political correctness is killing America. Political correctness. Now, what does that mean? Essentially what that means, and once again, we're talking about talking in code here. Political correctness is they would very much like to use racist, homophobic, and misogynistic language out in the open, but they don't get to. So this from Layla Lalami over at The Nation magazine in an article titled The Real PC Police. Undocumented Mexican immigrants are, according to Donald Trump, potential drug dealers, criminals, and rapists. The business that severed ties with him over these incendiary statements have taken, quote, the weak and very sad position of being politically correct, he said. Banning foreign Muslims from entering the United States is probably not politically correct, he said, but I don't care. In February, Trump lamented that ISIS terrorists are cutting the heads off Christians, but we are too politically correct to respond in kind. In February, he's not alone. In February, Ted Cruz insisted that having women serve on the front lines of combat makes no sense at all and that the military should not be governed by political correctness. John Kasich, the moderate in the race, or the supposed moderate, claimed that the March terrorist attacks in Brussels could have been foiled if not for, that's right, you guessed it, political correctness. But while Trump demands the right to openly insult others, he appears to be curiously sensitive to criticism about himself. At a rally in Fort Worth in February, he promised that if he were elected president, he would expand libel laws. When the New York Times writes a hit piece, which is a total disgrace, or when the Washington Post writes a hit piece, we can sue them for money instead of having no chance of winning because they're totally protected. In Trump's view, therefore, the First Amendment protects him when he refers to undocumented immigrants as rapists, but it must be curtailed when the media writes critically about him.
I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met. I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
When we talk about the First Amendment, and people talk openly, and then when they get backlash for the horrible things they say, well, I've got a First Amendment right, and you do. You can say whatever you want, but then we have a First Amendment right to respond. But they're saying, you're taking away my First Amendment right. No, the First Amendment protects your speech from being shut down by the government. And for all of these liberty, freedom, these guys are now want to elect this man who's talking about taking away your freedom of speech. Expanding the libel laws would be stripping you of your First Amendment. As long as you leave me with my Second Amendment right so I can kill people, that's all I need. No. I don't want to kill people. That's not the way I want to respond. I like talking. Clearly, here I stand in front of a mic. I like talking. I like the First Amendment. The First Amendment allows me to do what I'm doing right now. Second Amendment means nothing to me. Murder shouldn't even be a last resort. What the hell is wrong with you people? But it doesn't matter. He's going to expand the libel laws. He's going to strip us of our First Amendment right. And it's okay because it's Trump. North Korea, Burma, Turkmenistan, Equatorial Guinea, Libya, Eritrea, Cuba, Uzbekistan, Belarus, Syria, all of these places have oppressive governments where they curtail free speech all the time, where people are arrested for free speech, where people are killed for speaking openly. And one of the things that Donald Trump has had in his pocket the whole time is the fact that he's self-funding his campaign. He is beholden to nobody. He's self-funding his campaign. Well, now he has a super PAC. Initially, when this super PAC popped up, he said, no, I don't want any of your money, and actually sent a cease and desist letter to them. Do not raise money in my name. But now he is completely okay with them raising money in his name. Here's the robocall.
America needs to win again, and Donald Trump is the only candidate to make this happen. But the GOP establishment is determined to deny Donald Trump the nomination. Great America PAC is fighting back against the GOP by delivering the voices of millions through our national media campaign, but we need your help. Can we count on you to make a contribution to support Donald Trump and ensure that he wins the nomination? If you are willing to make a contribution, please press 1 after the tone.
When Johnson ran for president, he ran an unprecedented 4-minute long political ad, ran it all over the country, and it talked about Goldwater getting the nomination for president. Now, I'm going to play the ad for you. The ad is kind of long, but stick with me. It's really, really worth hearing. I've edited it down as much as I could for time, but I really want you to hear this incredible 4-minute ad that was very effective during that campaign, because this is history repeating itself.
I don't know just why they wanted to call this a confession. I certainly don't feel guilty about being a Republican. I've always been a Republican. My father is, his father was. The whole family is a Republican family. I voted for Dwight Eisenhower the first time I ever voted. I voted for Nixon the last time. But when we come to Senator Goldwater, now it seems to me we're up against a very different kind of a man. This man scares me. Now, maybe I'm wrong. A friend of mine has said to me, listen, just because a man sounds a little irresponsible during a campaign doesn't mean he's going to act irresponsibly. You know that theory that the White House makes the man. I don't buy that. You know what I think makes a president? I mean, aside from his judgment, his experience, are the men behind him, his advisors, the cabinet. And so many men with strange ideas are working for Goldwater. You'll hear a lot about what these guys are against. They seem to be against just about everything. But what are they for? The hardest thing for me about this whole campaign is to sort out one Goldwater statement from another. A reporter will go to Senator Goldwater. He'll say, Senator, on such and such a day, you said, and I quote, blah, 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 whatever it is, end quote. And then Goldwater says, well, I wouldn't put it that way. I can't follow that. Was he serious when he did put it that way? Is he serious when he says he wouldn't put it that way? I just don't get it. A president ought to mean what he says. President Johnson, now, Johnson at least is talking about facts. He says, look, we got the tax cut bill, and because of that you get to carry home X number of dollars more every payday. We got the nuclear test ban, and because of that there's X percent less radioactivity in the food. But Goldwater, often you can't, I can't figure out just what Goldwater means by the things he says. I read now where he says, a craven fear of death is sweeping across America. What is that supposed to mean? If he means that people don't want to fight a nuclear war, he's right. I don't. When I read some of these things that Goldwater says about total victory, I get a little worried, you know? I wish I was as sure that Goldwater is against war as I am that he's against some of these other things. I wish I could believe that he has the imagination to be able to just shut his eyes and picture what this country would look like after a nuclear war. Sometimes I wish I'd been at that convention in San Francisco. I mean, I wish I'd been a delegate. I really do, because I would have fought, you know? And I wouldn't have worried so much about party unity, because if you unite behind a man you don't believe in, it's a lie. I tell you, those people who got control of that convention, who are they? I mean, when the head of the Ku Klux Klan, when all these weird groups come out in favor of the candidate of my party, either they're not Republicans or I'm not. I thought about just not voting in this election, just staying home, but you can't do that because that's saying you don't care who wins, and I do care. I think my party made a bad mistake in San Francisco, and I'm going to have to vote against that mistake on the 3rd of November.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Pretty creepy, isn't it? And now this man is the de facto leader of your party.
Because Donald Trump is the GOP candidate, and I believe Hillary Clinton is going to win because of this, you will never elect another GOP person to high office ever again. Because what's going to happen is you are now going to have Hillary Clinton legalize as many voters as you can. Mm-hmm. The GOP is going to be completely racist, whether it's true or not, because of Donald Trump. You will never have another Republican president ever again.
Words alone do me no justice. So, Mr. President, if I'm going to keep it 100, yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga. Did it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final segment of the show, and I am about to use the word. Now, normally, in this particular spot, and I've talked about my disdain for this word on the show before, but I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say the whole thing. So if you do not want to hear me say it, this is your chance to step away from the show, to turn off your device, and just wait for next week's show. But for those of you that stick around, I'm not going to say the N-word. I'm going to say the word nigger. And I've grown tired, very tired, of this word. I grew up in a lot of what I refer to as economic prisons, African-American neighborhoods. And I would hear this word used all of the time. And it struck me as odd because I would learn in school that this is a word that white people came up with to refer to African Americans who they did not even see as full human beings. And to this day, I listen to a lot of hip hop music. And this word gets used a lot in hip hop as well. And what really, really struck me was one rapper in particular named Busta Rhymes, who's incredibly agile as a rapper, incredibly nimble. And I heard him in one of his songs. He's got a song called Break Your Neck. And what he's talking about is bobbing your head so hard because you're enjoying the music so much. So it's a party song, but the hook to the song is break your neck, nigga. Break your neck, nigga. And when I hear this, I said, you know, that phrase, I could easily hear a Trump supporter saying that phrase. I could easily hear a white nationalist saying that word. Now, he's trying to say it and let's party, but I could hear, if those words were leaving, say, a bald-headed white man's mouth, it would sound very, very different. And the debate happened. Now, that was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And then the debate the next day on the radio was on Rush Limbaugh and on Tom Hartman. People were calling up, freaking out over this word. And what really struck me, not so much when white people were mad about it, but was when African Americans were upset about this word. There was one gentleman I was listening to who said, this is a poisonous word. This word was meant to diminish us. This word was meant to enslave us. Because Larry Wilmore went on to say that, well, this was a term of endearment, that he used nigger and not nigger. So it's okay. Actually, It's not. And more African Americans are now or have always been where I am at and are now saying so. That this word started off as a poisonous word meant to imprison black folks in our society because white men weren't able to lock them all up. So they came up with a word to keep African Americans in their place. And that word still has a place, unfortunately, in our lexicon. African Americans use it towards one another in both positive and negative ways. And then in the Deep South, they have no problem at all using it against African Americans.
The Republicans, and I'm a Republican, this is about race. The Republicans hate that nigger Obama.
And this isn't me trying to be politically correct. This isn't me saying watch your language. This is me saying get to know your history. This is not a good word. This is not a nice word. And there are other words you can use in its place. Now, I know that when you're writing a hip-hop song, there's an awful lot of things that rhyme with one of those two words. But there are other things that you can use. And more we continue to use this word in polite society, the more and more we hold down our African-American brothers and sisters. And more these white nationalists that I've talked about this hour will continue to see African Americans as nothing more than niggers. And that needs to go away. Recently, Hillary Clinton made a joke with the mayor of New York City, and they felt that it was okay because he himself is married to an African American woman who he has two children with. So they decided to get on stage and make a joke about CP time, colored people time. This is another thing that simply holds down our African-American brothers and sisters.
I know I was a little late tonight. I was running on CPT. Which stands for jokes that white people should not make.
I understand the justification. But better than that, I understand where this word came from, why we have it, what it meant then, and what, whether you like to admit it or not, what it means now. This word needs to leave our lexicon. Nobody should be saying it. Not Southerners who are using it against African Americans and not African Americans using it towards each other. Now, I know that that's going to make a lot of folks unhappy, but hey, when any of us are oppressed, all of us are oppressed. And it's time to end that 500-year oppression. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tficpo. My name is Melvin. Have I said that? Okay, here we go. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of This Man on the Mic. Questions, comments, or hate mail are just a general statement or inquiry? You can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you. Yes, you, the one with the headphones on. Thank you for listening, even if you're not wearing headphones, whatever. We are the fire you can't put out, and we shall prevail. Rejected austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.